Thank you for tuning in to WPVMLP Asheville, North Carolina, 103.7, streaming online, WPVMFM.org, the voice of Asheville, heard all over the world.
Here's your Radio Asheville weather report. After a foggy and rainy morning, gradually becoming sunny today with a high near 80 degrees, a northwest wind will be gusting up to 24 miles per hour at times. Partly cloudy skies tonight with lows in the upper 50s, mostly sunny and pleasant on Saturday with a high near 83. Saturday night will be partly cloudy with a low near 60 degrees, sunny and warmer on Sunday with a high near 86. I'm meteorologist Angie Kathleen on Radio Asheville 103.7.
Welcome to Twice 5 Miles Radio, fertile ground for conversations worth listening to and remembering. I'm your host, James Nave. Today I'm going solo, and I'd like to focus on a topic that I've been thinking a fair amount about recently, as well as I've had it rolling around in my head for quite a while, and the topic is live life like a festival. Live life like a festival. How does one live life like a festival? Is that even possible? What does festival mean? And why is this rolling around in my head right now? Well, if you live in Asheville, North Carolina, you've likely heard of the Leaf Festival, which was founded by Jennifer Pickering as the Lake Eden Arts Festival in 1995. I was part of that festival from the beginning. Even before the festival launched, I was part of the planning crew, the visionary crew, getting things organized. My focus was poetry, specifically spoken word poetry, and here's why. I had been involved in the beginnings of the new spoken word poetry movement, starting in 1984, when a group of collaborators got together after watching the Storytelling Festival in Jonesboro, Tennessee, and we started putting together traditional poems, memorizing them like you would a theater piece, and performing them experimentally. And when we realized we had something that was along the thread lines of storytelling, we leaned into it and developed a 2-hour show, which we showcased at McDibbs in Black Mountain, North Carolina, in August of 1984. So by the time Jennifer Pickering approached me and was curious about how she could include a poetry performance strand in the brand new Lake Eden Arts Festival, I was more than willing to do it. The resources were there. I knew the people. Easy to plug shows in. And we focused on the Poetry Slam because the Poetry Slam was very popular back then. People came out to see it. Judges judged the poets. And everybody had a good time. So my idea was to give it a test run at the first Leaf Festival, which I did. It was a success from the start. We had a small venue in the beginning. A couple of years later, we moved it to Eden Hall. And that's where we stayed throughout the entire arc of the Leaf Festival experience on Lake Eden property. And as I said, throughout the entire arc of the Leaf Festival, the last Leaf Festival was held on the Lake Eden property last October, October 2025. And now that festival has moved on to other locations. Meanwhile, Lake Eden is still there. Jennifer Pickering and her team are focusing on some brand new events that will start happening this fall, specifically the Lake Eden reunion and book launch. And the reason I say book launch is because for the last year, I've been collaborating with Jennifer Pickering and Lauren Braher on a book titled, you guessed it, Live Life Like a Festival. The book is driven by photos, supported by text. It's going to be over 300 pages long, and it's the history of the Leaf Festival on Lake Eden property. And the reason for the book title, Live Life Like a Festival, many years ago, Jennifer Pickering mentioned to me that she wanted to live her whole life like a festival. And I said, well, that sounds like a great book title. She kept that idea going in her head for many, many years until 2 years ago when she announced that she intended to put a book together titled Live Life Like a Festival. So that's what we've been working on for the last couple of years. And prior to that, I've been rolling the ideas around what it means to engage life from a festival point of view. So this isn't a new thing for me. The book is new, but the idea, The idea is an old idea. And you can find poetry references as well around living life like a festival. And one of the poems I've always referred back to, it was written by William Carlos Williams, and it's called The Dance. And I'd like to give it to you now just to set the mood for this exploration that we will share for the next bit of time together. I want to unpack the ideas around festival and how we as human beings approach life very often from a festival point of view, and how we can also approach the more difficult things life has to offer through the lens of a festival sensibility, similar to a poetic sensibility. No matter how hard the going, you can still view the world with a sense of optimism, a bit of humor, even in tragic times. So this poem was written by William Carlos Williams, as I said, and it's called The Dance. In Bruegel's great picture, The Kermis, the dancers go round. They go round and around, the squeal and the blare and the tweedle of bagpipes, a bugle and fiddles tipping their bellies, round as the thick-sided glasses whose wash they impound, their hips and their bellies off balance to turn them, kicking and rolling about the fair grounds, swinging their butts. Those shanks must be sound to bear up under such rollicking measures. Prance as they dance, in Bruegel's great picture, The Kermis. So when I think about living life like a festival, I see those dancers in medieval times out in the village dancing around, swirling, just having a good time. You've seen it before as well. You see it at a square dance. You see it when people get together at a dance party. You can see it whenever communities gather around, or church gatherings, or any other kind of gathering. So these words that we have for the different kinds of rendezvous that we participate in, you could fairly say all of them can possibly have a festival vibe about them, a festival sensibility. So what does it mean to live life like a festival? Now, I will admit, I've been thinking about this for a long time, and in this show today, I am exploring it. It's not new territory, but it's territory that I'm still creating questions about. The first question is, can one actually live life like a festival? Is that a possibility? A friend of mine brought that question up. She said, well, I don't know if I can even do that or not. What does it even mean to live life like a festival? So that got me wondering, are we on the right track here? Is it possible to do this? And my conclusion is, yes, it is. That said, I've had to shift my thinking a bit around the sense of festive, the sense of what living life like a festival would mean. And I'm exploring that right now. So, for example, if you wanted to stay on the surface of living life like a festival, you might remember some festivals you've been to. Maybe you've been to the Leaf Festival. Certainly you've been to maybe a poetry festival. You've been to a birthday party. Celebrating a birthday party, that's a festival. People are gathered around creating a happy sensibility, a joyous sensibility, a fun-loving sensibility. There's a shared agreement amongst the folks in a festival environment that for at least this length of time, all things will be well. Now, I've never been to the Burning Man event. I know a lot of people who have been there, and that's a festival on a great scale. Everybody converges onto Burning Man. They set up their camps. They have all kinds of experimental things. People interact. People deal with each other in different kinds of ways. And yet within the context of the Burning Man Festival, I'm sure people have some downsides. For example, maybe someone gets angry. For example, maybe there's a tragedy or two that happens. It is hot out there and people are pushing the limits. So a festival can mean a lot more than simply having a good time. It can mean, or at least it's becoming to me, is beginning to mean I can take in the broader imaginative sensibilities that are around me using my own imagination and process even the hard times from different angles. So it may be that a festival might be similar to looking through a kaleidoscope. As you spin the kaleidoscope, looking through it, things scatter around like a storm, really. And then when you stop, things fall into place. So it's possible that this notion of living life like a festival can be revised or expanded to feel the way the wind blows on your arm, like the wind is blowing on my arm right now. I'm recording this in the Taos, New Mexico area, Arroyo Seco, to be specific. I'm in a wonderful room in a large house. The afternoon sun is going down. It's around 8 p.m. Shadows are across the field. It's coming into the longest days of the year. The wind is moving the trees, moving the bushes. I see a crow in the cottonwoods across the field. The sky is emerald, almost bright, like some shiny object from a dream or an imagination. The windows are open, and I feel that cool breeze on my arm. A second crow just flew into the tree, and now a third crow. I wonder if they're having a crow meeting. I am alone, and yet I am occupied right now with this notion of what it means to live like a festival. How can I make an evening an ordinary day? It's a Monday evening. I'm recording this. Why would I think of this as a festival? I'm looking at the spider webs that are on the windowsill, and the wind moves the spider webs back and forth, back and forth. And if I pull back a little bit and look at the scene, my wallet on the shelf, a lamp on the table, some books stacked up, some packing tape, some orange peels on the table. I just had an orange. Some notebooks, various stuff, old pages from journals years ago. Does a story begin at one place? Probably somewhere between birth and death will do. My story begins on a porch in Western North Carolina. It was a morning porch shared by me and my friend Andrew Brown. Two men watching the sun, sipping coffee, and rolling our stories across the lives we hoped we would live. The porch was just an ordinary porch. I wrote this years and years ago. Does it have great value as a literary piece? I don't know. My willingness to notice the spider web, the three crows in the tree, pick this piece of writing up and read it to you publicly, bring it back to life, that's all built around this notion of what it means to live life like a festival. I am coming to the conclusion more and more, if you can call it a conclusion, or at least I'm living into it more, that when you go throughout your life, you can just scan the windows. Oh, there's a spider web. Big deal. Okay, there's something I wrote a while back. Yeah, I mean, what romance lies in an orange peel? Can the orange peel be festive? Can the way I view things be festive? And I am beginning to realize, not that I haven't always realized it, but I'm sinking deeper into it, that there's not that much difference between the festival sensibilities that you can bring to living and also the poetic sensibilities. Now, we come to the tragedies of life. I went recently to Paris to visit my good friend John Van Hasselt, who's working with a very heavy-duty disease called Parkinson's. If any of you have ever experienced that disease, you may have it now, if you're listening, or you may have a friend who has it. You know, eventually, the outcome is a bit bleak, and I'm being quite generous here. Basically, it's a bleak outcome. And my friend John has had this disease for quite a while, and we've been friends for years. I've mentioned him many times on this show. And I went to see him. Well, you go see a friend you've known a long time. They have a disease you know that will take them sooner than later. They no longer will be here on the earth. Is that a festival? How can it even be so? It's a tragedy. Oh my God, it's painful. I'm going to see my friend John. And it is painful. No joke. It's a struggle. And yet, the 3 weeks I spent with my friend John and his wife Sylvie, and Sylvie was there part of the time, and then John and I were there the rest of the time, navigating this rigorous disease, we laughed. We found so many things that he once could do and not able to do. We found it a bit funny. He even slipped out of his chair once and was having a hard time getting up. And I know it was tough, and it was tough, but we laughed. We laughed like we were boys. Something really, really superior and amusing about being there in that situation and trying to get up. We managed. He got up. We sat down, and it wasn't really funny, but we thought it was I don't know, humorous, amusing, and just dramatically ironic. Like, my God, I can't believe we've arrived at this. We never thought we would, and here we are, living life like a festival. Here we are, living life like a festival. So life, when you stop to think about it, is a festival of delight. It's a festival of tragedy. It is an absolute full tilt collage of everything all rolled up into one thing. So when Jennifer Pickering started talking about living life like a festival, my brain whirled around and whirled around and whirled around. And I was discussing this with my other creative collaborator, Allegra Houston. We have a project called the Imaginative Storm Writing Project. So we're always talking about how to write things, how to let your imagination guide you, how to be improvisational, and how to take the improvisational sensibilities of one's life and put them into some kind of form like I'm doing now, trusting that what comes next will be fine. Doesn't have to be genius. It just has to come. And you give it the green light, and then it pops out. So I was talking to Allegra about this idea of the festive sensibilities, the idea of how imaginative are you? We call it imaginative intelligence. The idea of making creative things. And I said to Allegra, I said, you know, I like to write. I think of myself as a writer now and then, but it's not my identity. My identity, who I am, what I do, has always been grounded in creating events for people, creating situations that people can wallow around in, can interact in. And I said to Allegra over coffee yesterday, I said, you know, I've been producing some version of a festival all my life. And I paused for a moment and I decided, okay, I'm going to claim this momentum that I've had. I'm not going to blow it off. I said the first festival I remember producing was a surprise birthday party for my grandmother on my father's side when I was in the 11th grade. We called her Grandmother Nave. In this show, I always tell everybody my name is James Nave, spelled N-A-V-E. It has an accent agu over the E. The family name is actually Nave. Years ago, somebody told me Nave sounded better than Nave, and he said he thought I should change my name to Nave. I didn't really change it, but people started to use it, so it became somewhat of a nickname. So when I was in the 11th grade, I was Jimmy Nave, and I cared about my grandmother a great deal. She was a devout Methodist, very stern in her beliefs, and would go to church every Sunday. So, of course, the natural place I went to organize the people to come to her birthday party, I went to the ladies in the church. It was 1967 when I hosted her surprise birthday party. She was born in 1895, so she was celebrating her 70th birthday, and I was 17. The ladies in the church were all about her age, and she had no idea I had organized it. It was quite an event for her. I had somebody make the cake. I don't remember who. I got my mother to come down to my grandmother's house. We lived next door, really, maybe a 3 or 4 minute walk. So the plan held. My mother came down and asked my grandmother to come back to her house and help her with something. She made it up. Who knows what it was. And while my grandmother was down at my mother's house, the ladies from the church all arrived, and somehow we hid their cars. I'm not sure how I did that. And then I ran down to my mother's house and signaled to mother that we were ready. And so mother brought grandmother Nave back down the lane. She opened the door, and all of the ladies from the church yelled, "Surprise!" And they had her birthday and gifts and the whole thing. If that was not a festival, I really don't know what was. And I was very connected to my grandmother because she always loved to watch soap operas in the afternoon and quilt. So I would go down in the afternoons after school and watch a soap opera with her and watch her quilt. And if I got lucky, she would give me a piece of cake. She was also, like I said, a very devout Christian woman. She had a bit of a stern, if you will, chip on her shoulder. She was always looking for the ways that my brother David and I could sin or would sin or had done something wrong. And if we got a low grade on our report card, she took a smug satisfaction in it because she somehow believed we were being punished by the Lord. It wasn't true, really, but she believed it. And I remember when David and I were much, much younger, maybe 7 or 8, we would always go down and play at my grandmother's house. And so that one day, my brother David had learned a new word. He didn't know what it meant. It was the F word. And he decided, and I still don't know why he decided to do this, maybe just mischievous David, of course. He wrote the F word on the chalkboard above my grandmother's telephone in the hallway. It was a rotary phone, and she had a party line. This was in the 1950s. Oh, when she saw that, if there was any hell in her to break loose, it certainly did break loose. She thought we were going to visit the devil for sure, and she figured we would do it that night even before we died. And I don't think it was very funny at the time, and David and I had no idea what the word meant. We just had learned it and thought it was a dirty word maybe, so let's write it on the board. So we did, and it was quite funny. Or at least we thought it was funny until she told my father and mother about this horrible thing we had done. So our punishment was to write 500 times, "I will not write profanity on Grandmother Knave's blackboard." I doubt Grandmother Knave would have said my brother David and I were living life like a festival. As far as our grandmother was concerned, we were not. But as far as David and I were concerned, we certainly were having a festive time writing the F word on her board. Let's go a little deeper into what it means to live life like a festival. As I said, when I produced my grandmother's surprise birthday party, I didn't claim I was producing a festival. I'm just organizing a party, was what I was thinking. And yet upon reflection, the same dynamics that went into organizing my grandmother's birthday party are the same dynamics, same strategy, same thinking, same planning, all of the variables that have to go into an event, they're always the same, no matter what you produce or make happen. If you are a parent and you've ever given your child a birthday party, which you probably have, that's a festival. The gathering has all of the elements that any kind of festival has. So thinking of life like a festival, when you go deeper into that idea, it's possible that all of life is organized like a festival. And the reason I say that is because when you get into the bigger scaled festivals like the Leaf Festival that Jennifer Pickering and her crew of friends produced for 30 years, every element of human nature appears at the festival. Good, bad, indifferent, up, down, around. People break up. People fall in love. People have children conceived at the festival. Sometimes people pass on to the next world at a festival. So all of the elements are at play in an organized festival contained at Lake Eden or wherever you happen to go. And you've probably been to many festivals. So thinking like that, the whole world, everything that we are participating in, is contained in the earthly circumstances. Could it be that all things are festive? And the reason why I love to think of festive is because we as human beings naturally lean in the direction of optimism, even when there's a struggle. I remember I watched a TED talk by James Nachtwey. He was and still is one of the great war correspondents, photojournalist, and his mission in life, and he's very skilled at it and quite respected, many, many prizes. I think he's probably now in his 80s. His job was to go into the conflict regions of the world and take photographs. A conflict region doesn't necessarily have to have a war involved. A conflict region could be poverty-stricken areas of America or of the Philippines. And I reference America and the Philippines because I've had a lot of experience in both of those countries. So I've seen the good and the bad in both of the countries. So James Nachtwey traveled around the world and took fantastic prize-winning photographs. And in his TED talk, he breaks all the rules. First of all, he reads it. Second of all, he says he doesn't like to give TED Talks, so he's going to read whether anybody likes it or not. He's not particularly interested in following the time frame, so he talks 22 minutes. He has endless slides, and the whole thing worked. It was fantastic. And the most impressive part of his talk was the slide he showed that he had taken when he was doing a story on a refugee camp during a famine, and I don't know what country it was, somewhere in Africa. And he noticed a man crawling with no clothes on, almost a skeleton, skinny, 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 just bones, really. And Nachtwey knew he was crawling toward a feeding station. And Nachtwey also was carrying camera equipment, well-fed, good salary, traveling around the world. So here we have the spectrum, the festival spectrum, if you will, the both ends of the way life can play out for people. And when Nachtwey saw this fellow crawling across the ground, in his TED talk, he says, I looked at this man and I realized I'm carrying my cameras. I have everything I need. This man has absolutely nothing. And Nachtwey felt like in some ways the man crawling with nothing to a feeding station had much more courage than he did, the photojournalist, going into all these conflict regions. Because the man would not stop. He put one hand and one knee in front of each other, crawling to the feeding station. And Nachtwey impressed upon me that no matter how life plays out for you, most people will keep moving towards something. The mystery, maybe. Is it mysticism or is it just good down to earth? I've got to survive. Whatever it is, that urgency, that drive to move forward, like that man was moving forward, or Nachtwey's drive to take the picture and then present it at the TED Talk. That's the festival sensibility. That's the indigenous optimism that I believe we have. And I think that is a very important thing to remember and to think about when we're moving through lives. Coming back to my grandmother, I'm now thinking of my grandfather, who was born in 1895 in Jonesboro, Tennessee area, Chucky, Tennessee, to be exact. And I'm thinking of the way he grew up. Many of the people surrounding him as a boy had lived through the Civil War. Most of them were probably about 50 years old. Many of them had fought in the Civil War. It was a rambunctious time back then. So when I was thinking about life in America, as I prepared for recording this radio show, I couldn't help but think of my grandfather all those years ago, growing up in a time that I have no sense of at all. And yet I imagine when he was a boy, he played in the creek. I imagine he had his mates that he ran around with. I imagine he listened to Civil War stories from the 60-year-old veterans sitting around on porches during the summertime. I suspect, like any other child, he had his festive sensibilities. So here we come back to the title of the upcoming book, Live Life Like a Festival. I think it's a great title. I am thinking about the word like, live life like a festival. While I understand why like is in the title, I'm now thinking maybe we could revise the subtext of the title, the way we understand it, away from living life like a festival to we are living the life festival. We're living in the festival. The festival surrounds us, the festival of life itself. It broadens the concept. It takes me out of myself and includes me in the festival of life, the festival of living. So speaking of living, I didn't finish my recording last night, so I went to bed. Maybe I had a festive dream. Now I'm up again recording, and it's morning. I'm watching little yellow butterflies flit around in the field just outside my window. Marley, the big black Labrador retriever, walked by on his morning rounds. The blackbirds are definitely in the trees. They've finished their nesting. And the little ones, you can tell the immature ones because they're gray instead of black, are bouncing around all over the place. A couple of days ago, a skunk came by. I am living life in the festival of life. And when I think of it like that, it gives me a sense of confidence, really, of power, of creative range. My goodness, if that is the case, and I do believe it is, we have a comprehensive, optimistic proposition. Now, I also want to point out, as you already know, life is not always a bed of roses. Life is not always a good time, Charlie, down at the tavern. Life is a rough and tumble proposition that holds the entire range that every human holds. Right now, we have 8 billion people on the earth, and this festival of life that I'm talking about includes all 8 billion people in every country in the world, and I am sure, without a doubt, more than one person is crawling toward a feeding station right now. James Noctway is not there to take their photo, but you can be sure that person's crawling towards the feeding station. And you can also be sure right now, in more than one place in the world, a new mother is holding her baby. I doubt the starving person crawling towards the feeding station would say, "I'm living life like a festival." I suspect the new mother holding her baby might be more inclined to claim that idea. When you think about your responsibility in the world as a creative person, as a maker, as somebody that's alive, interacting with your community, and when you think about the opportunities you have to take a broader perspective around the festival of life, then you open up possibilities that you might not have noticed previously. I want to go a little bit deeper now into these memories that I've been working with. I'm recording this off the top of my head. This is not written text. I'm exploring this. Thank goodness we have community radio that allows me to do this kind of work. And what I've been noticing as I've gone through this time with you and of exploring all of these possibilities, I have started to rev up my own festival of memories. So not only can you live life like a festival in the festival of life, when you start to play around with the memories have a way of collating in your subconscious mind, and things start to percolate, things start to pop up that you may have not ever thought of before, or you may have dreamed of, and now they're conscious, but a festival of memories. And when you start to put together that festival of memories, you come back to the kaleidoscope, spinning round and round and round like the villagers in William Carlos Williams' poem, The Dance. I don't usually repeat poems in my show, but I think this one is worth repeating again. So here you go, The Dance by William Carlos Williams. In Bruegel's great picture, The Kermis, the dancers go round, they go round and around, the squeal and the blare and the tweedle of bagpipes, a bugle and fiddles tipping their bellies, round as the thick-sided glasses whose wash they impound. Their hips and their bellies off balance to turn them, kicking and rolling about the fairgrounds, swinging their butts, those shanks must be sound to bear up under such rollicking measures, prance as they dance, in Bruegel's great picture, The Kermis. Bruegel painted that picture in 1587, and William Carlos Williams wrote The Dance in 1944. So if you had attended the Leaf Festival last October 2025, you would have seen the same vibe that Bruegel captured in the 1500s and that William Carlos captured in 1944. So that's even more evidence in my mind that this festival that we're living in, the festival of life and the festival of our memories, is probably one of the most essential concepts we can have as a way of keeping balance, of keeping harmony, of being reminded that we are participating always and forever in something much, much greater than us. And while it would be very easy to lean mystical here, I'm staying on the ground. I'm talking about the butterflies. I'm also talking about being excited to drive to the grocery store a little later on today to buy some supplies and get a salad at the salad bar. Really simple stuff. I call it the festival of living. We're all doing it in one way or another here on this earth. So this now brings me around to another element that's at play. It's the element of organization. I organized my grandmother's surprise birthday party. I put my mind to it. I did some creative work around it. Who will bake the cake? How many candles do I put on the cake? Do I put all the candles or only one? Who do I invite? Will they come? Organization plays a big role in how we go about experiencing our lives in ways that can keep us balanced and keep us in harmony. It's not, like I said, rose-colored all the time experiences where you're just dancing in the forest like the fairies in the mythological stories. It's how you organize your life so that you keep a bit of optimism, if you will, around organizing. So as I was reviewing just in my own life all of the events that I have organized over the years, and I like the idea of doing these kinds of inventories, you can do it too. I'll bet you if you inventory the things that you've actually done, the remarkable successes that you've had, small and large, you will find those successes far outweigh the failures. And I know this is going to sound a little cliche, but the failures are what lead to the successes. So all the failures that we've had in our lives somehow give us the kind of knowledge that we need in order to keep moving forward. And when you do that inventory, you might find you have a greater festival sensibility range than you suspected. The dinner party when you invite people over, the bigger scale things that you offer. For example, the first big scaled event I offered was when Alan Wolfe and I, when we were working with Poetry Alive back in the 80s, we organized a week-long gathering for teachers who wanted to come to Warren Wilson College and spend a week studying how to perform poems as a way to teach their students to go deeper into the poetic sensibilities that the teachers had to teach. Sure enough, you guessed it, The Dance by William Carlos Williams was one of the poems that we worked with. Why did we work with The Dance? It's short, it's easy to remember, and it has lots of incredible rhythm. And it also is based on a number of art forms: poetry, painting, dance, music, all come to play in that one poem. So we used The Dance by William Carlos Williams as a basis for the week. And there were other poems as well. It was an entire festival. Now, what made it a festival? If nobody had appeared and only Alan and I were standing there in an empty room, we would have been disappointed and probably had not as lively a festival experience or a festival spirit. But when the people all showed up, like they do in the Kermes by Bruegel, they showed up, they naturally started to interact, they naturally started to feed each other with delight, with curiosity, with joy, with stories that sometimes had some heaviness about them. And they used all of those experiences, all of those memories, the festivals of their memories, as a way of creating this momentum throughout the week. So that was in the 80s. And as I moved around the world, I've had so many occasions to create all kinds of opportunities. As I said, I love to give dinner parties. I've done that many times. Sometimes I've collaborated with people and we've offered salons. I'll tell you this, if you would like to do a salon, it's really smart, because what happens if you're doing a little dinner party or a covered dish dinner and you tell people you're hosting a salon, ask them to bring something creative. Not only will they bring something creative, but the food will be better and they will dress better because they've been invited to a salon. So a salon can be a festival. The Leaf Festival, certainly for 30 years, was a festival full of life and vitality. And like life in general, I only experienced a sliver of the Leaf Festival. So if you go to any kind of festival or even a small gathering, you only experience a sliver of it. And that's true with everybody else. But those little slivers become big memories. And when those memories get in place in your mind, that's what makes life worthwhile, absolutely makes life worthwhile. So in the spirit of being in life as a festival, I'd like to offer you another poem. I wrote this one, and it's called The Bug. And the reason I like it is because it's festive. Its subject is a bug and the relationship that we have with the environment, which, of course, is the relationship we have with life. So here you go, The Bug. If you see a bug and a bug sees you, tell me then, what will you do? Will you dance and sing and run and play and say to the bug, well, it's okay that the world is wet and green and lean, and you're the finest bug I have ever seen? I'll tell you the truth, because I know that in this world, wherever you go, you'll find a bug that will be your friend, one that will tell you exactly when it's time to get up and time to come in. So if you find that bug, keep your feet on the floor. Don't mash him in the head. Don't kick him out the door. He'll be your buddy. He'll be your friend. He'll carry your flag around the bend. Put him on a plant. Set him in the sun. Watch him grin and jump and run from leaf to leaf and stem to stem. So just remember, it's up to you. Don't kick those bugs, whatever you do. And tomorrow, when one comes dancing along, beat on a milk jug and sing your song. Then you'll know the world is fine, 'cause you and the bugs will all be trying to get along and have some fun dancing on the grass till the day is done. So I'll ask you once more and answer me true. If you see a bug and a bug sees you, tell me then what you will do. That was The Bug. I don't remember when I wrote that poem. I don't usually write rhymey pieces like that, but there's something about bugs that just delight me. The little things crawl around. They seem to know what they're doing. They seem to know where they're going. They have a purpose, passion even, desire. I don't know if bugs have strategy. I don't know if they have like a bug journey meeting before they go out into the world. I'd like to think they do. It's a beautiful thing when you start to consider your life and how it folds into everything around you. We are living in some existential times. Our existence seems to be threatened. It's a difficult time for a lot of people. As I said, if James Nocklay was out there, he would be taking pictures of things that would disturb us. Life is life. And within the context of its festiveness, you have all of the things that go on. And people somehow, regardless of where they go or how they play or how they deal with the heavy stuff and the easy stuff, they seem to always lean into a bit of delight, a smile, a sense of longing or of purpose. So in The Dance by William Carlos Williams, you can imagine there's music. And when you look closely at people having a festive time at a festival like the Leaf Festival or a poetry festival or a writing festival, a word fest, any kind of gathering, they are smiling. They're interacting with each other. They're caring about each other. So it may be this idea of living in life as a festival. It may be that it's a containment that has a sense of love about it. And I know love can be overused, and sometimes I get tired of everybody talking about love. That said, I know the people I love, and when I lean into it, it feels really, really good. So I'd like to give you one of my absolutely favorite songs, sung by my good friend Big John Scherer, and he's rewritten it a bit. Most of the time when you hear it, it's either the Nature Boy or the Nature Girl who's the main character. Big John's version has both characters in it. So here's Big John Scherer singing about love. Wonderful thing to remind us all the world is festive if we allow it to be so.
Well, there was a boy, a very special kind of boy. He wandered very far, very far, over land and sea. He was a little shy and sad of eye, but very wise, very wise was he. And then one day happened to pass my way. We talked of many things, golden kings. Then he said to me, the greatest thing were they, happened to pass my way. We talked of many things, kings and queens. Then they said to me, the greatest thing
that, my friends, was Big John Scherer singing Nature Boy, Nature Girl. I saw Big John a few months ago back in the spring at a blues contest in Chapel Hill area. John lives in the Chapel Hill area. He's been in the music world for as long as I've known him. I met him back in the days when we were both associated with the North Carolina Outward Bound School. John Huey was the director then, and I believe John Huey introduced me to Big John, and we've stayed friends all these years. Big John was a pilot back in the days when he flew for Eastern Airlines, and then he was also a firefighting pilot. He used to go out and swoop down over the big fires and dump the dust on the fires to try to keep them down. But now Big John just plays his music. So here we are back to life and festival and showing up and living life like a festival, living into life because it is a festival, celebrating our lives regardless of whether they're up or down, hard or easy, knowing that the gift of being alive has a great, great value. Not everybody gets to do it. And those people we know who have gone on to other places that are no longer here on the earth, they no longer get to do what we're doing right now. And I'm so grateful that I can sit here and create an hour show off my memories, my festival of memories. I don't do this improvisationally. I've done it long enough to know how to put something together and trust that somewhere in all of the festival of words that I've generated in the last 50 or so minutes, in this festival of words, festival of my memories, connecting with the festival of your life, the festival of your memories, of your words, of who you are, wherever you are in the world, however you grew up, whatever your story is, knowing that somehow something might connect, some little something that pops up. I didn't intend to play Nature Boy and Nature Girl by Big John Scherer. It just popped out of my mind. I thought, yes, this is the right time for that. So when you allow yourself to embrace this amazing festival range that you have, I get tongue-tied when I say festive festival. When you embrace your life, there's a reward for that. It's almost like, and here I am leaning a bit into the mysticism here, it's a bit like your prayers are instantly answered. We wonder if that's true. Do prayers offer answers after you lift them up? You can't measure it scientifically. But I would like to think, sitting here, looking out this window, finishing this show, hearing the arroyo run by the house across the field, watching Marley walk by, the old black Labrador retriever. I don't know, his hair is so dark and the sun's so bright. I hope Marley's not too heated up. Thinking about all that, coming to the end of this show, I hope somewhere in my verbiage, somewhere in my narrative, somewhere in my meanderings and my talking, you've gotten something that brings you back home to you. So in the end, living your life like a festival or in the festival of life is you being home with yourself. Knock, knock, who's there? I'm coming home now. I'm here. You answer the door, and who do you see? You see yourself. You let yourself in. Maybe you make a dinner for yourself or for your friends. Be present in the festival of life, the festival of memories, the festival of you. And on that note, thanks ever so much for tuning in to Twice 5 Miles Radio. I'm your host, James Nave. This show airs always first on WPVM-FM in Asheville and KCEI, Cultural Energy Radio, in Taos. Devine Dial, thank you for managing WPVM-FM, and Robin Collier and Mike Tilley, thank you for managing KCEI in Taos, which airs up in Alamosa, Colorado. So if you're in Alamosa, Colorado, hey, thanks for listening all the way up there in the High Rockies, Colorado High. What was it? John Denver said Colorado Mountain High. Another story, another day. But anyway, thank you all for being there. I'd like to also thank Walter Parks for our theme song, walterparks.com, for more on Walter's music. And I'd like to say that if you ever want to join me for my Imaginative Storm writing collective gathering circle every Saturday with my creative collaborator, Allegra Houston, it's easy to do. Just go to imaginativestorm.com, and there you'll see the information that will allow you to find that little Zoom link. And so wherever you are in this wild and woolly festival world that we live in, you can click through and join us on a Saturday and spend a little time with a group of rather delightful people, in my opinion. And if you would like to reach me, you can always email me, nave@jamesnave.com. nave@jamesnave.com. I would love to hear from you. Curious about what you're doing in your life, where you are. And if by chance you ever see me on the street in Asheville or in Taos, if you recognize me, it's radio, so you might not be able to, but if you do, I'd love it if you stopped and said hello. I would really like to meet you in person. So there you go. We've arrived at the end of our time together. Again, thanks ever so much for tuning in, and I hope you come back sometime soon. And until then, I'll catch you on that turnaround somewhere down the line.
Hi, I'm Johnny Cottle, the weather guy here at Radio Asheville. My love for weather started in 1989 when Hurricane Hugo tore through my hometown. It left a lasting impression. Around the same time, I discovered my hometown AM station on a Sony Walkman, and radio had me hooked. I got my first on-air job in high school, playing the hits in the morning, then heading off to homeroom. These days, I bring you the forecast with 25 years of public safety communications experience behind me. Thanks for trusting me with your daily weather, right here on Radio Asheville.
Come to me, and ease my pain. If you needed me, I would come to you. I would swim the seas for to ease your pain. Well, in the night forlorn, all the morning's born, and the morning shines with the lights of love. And you will miss sunrise if you close your eyes, and that would break my heart in two. Since I showed her how to lay her lily hand in mine, Loop and Lil agree she's a sight to see, a treasure for the poor to find. if I needed you, would you come?